Mika Sifri is co-founder and editor of the Personal Democracy Forum, which is a website, an annual conference that covers the ways technology is changing politics. Also, techpresident.com, the award-winning group blog on how the American presidential candidates are using the web and how the web is using them. Mika also consults on how political organizations, campaigns, nonprofits, and media entities can adapt to and thrive in a networked world. His latest book is called WikiLeaks and the Age of Transparency. Before that, he wrote, "Is that a politician in your pocket, Washington, on $2 million a day?" Spoiling for a Fight, Third-Party Politics in America, and he was co-editor of the Iraq War Reader and the Gulf War Reader, Mika Sifri.
Thank you, Amy. Good morning. Oh, all right, good. People are awake. I can't pull that trick. It's great to be here, and it's great to see so many people here who are obviously concerned and I hope motivated by the issues that WikiLeaks has brought to the fore. I'm going to make some general comments and then get into a few specifics and hopefully leave time so that we can get the audience involved soon. First, generally, I think it's important to recognize that the story here is not so much WikiLeaks as the larger phenomenon that it represents. It's quite possible that a year from now, we won't be talking about WikiLeaks anymore, but we will still be talking about and using our ability to do transparency to the powerful in very important new ways. So it's critical, I think, that we position this as part of a larger trend and a larger movement, which I call technology-enabled civic engagement or civic hacktivism, and it's exploding all around us. The reason why it is, and this is really something I get into more detail in my book, is just in the last few years, thanks to the dispersion of technology, all this computers you have in your pocket and so on, and its connectedness, that activism has become more social. It's easy to start things. You don't have to wait for permission. You don't need to necessarily have a big organization to have a big impact. You don't necessarily have to have big money to reach millions of people, and lots of us are just diving in and doing it. The second big change is that information and data itself have become more fluid and connectable, and that the internet as an open platform, as the open platform, makes that possible. WikiLeaks is just one extension of those trends, and it happens to be a really interesting one because it's transnational. It's not living in only one country. So it is harder to suppress a site like WikiLeaks thanks to the resilience of the internet and thousands of people willing to, Amazon took it off its servers, people were set up mirror sites in other places. So that resilience is at the core of a new kind of transnational journalism, or at least the possibility of doing it. That's what we have to protect. But the larger trend is that the two big things that are changing. First of all, the people who were formerly known as the audience, as Jay Rosen likes to say, actually now want a say in making the show. And we actually want to know what's going on. And if necessary, we will pull the information together ourselves to find out. And the people who were formerly known as the authorities, and that's in both senses of the word, right? Authority as an expert and authority as in the people with the power, they're losing their grip on what is authoritative. And when they actually know that we can watch them and we may be able to expose them, I actually think in some cases this will result in better behavior in the long run. That is the promise of this bottom-up transparency movement. But it's a different environment. And in this environment, we all have to earn and re-earn our trust every day. You don't get trust anymore as an authoritative source because you have a badge or because you went to the right college or because your byline appears, say, in the New York Times. You earn it by being transparent and truthful. And when you're not, we're going to distrust you. The WikiLeaks is not this change. It's just a symptom of this larger change. Now, some particular comments about the WikiLeaks situation itself. First of all, I think we need to recognize that WikiLeaks itself is broken. Julian Assange is a flawed figure. I salute his courage and his audacity and his resoluteness, but I don't like the way he runs this organization, and I'm not the only one. There are lots of people who have left being volunteers for WikiLeaks because of Julian's autocratic way of running it. I don't think it is the way to run. It's hardly an example of transparency in action. We don't know what it's releasing, what it's holding back, why, how you get information from WikiLeaks now. No idea. The portal for submitting leaks to WikiLeaks, it's been asserted by one of the former programmers and spokesmen, Daniel Domscheit-Berg, that the portal is broken. It's not secure. So, you know, we have these are serious questions, and it's important that we not, you know, push them under the rug just because, you know, it's doing otherwise noble work. Second point, the New York Times is clearly broken. One thing that people may not realize is that the New York Times has an entire set of the cables, all 250,000, whatever the exact number is. Bill Keller has said this on the record. David Sanger, their lead national correspondent in Washington, has said this to me directly. And there's no explanation from the Times. I'm actually right now trying to get, maybe I'll get an answer. If I do, I'll let you know, about how they handle this database inside the building. As Greg mentioned, it's starting, you know, we're seeing stories appear in other places, like Reuters did a story on corruption in Saudi Arabia based on cables going back to 1996, about how the patronage system there works. Now the Washington Post is reporting from Yemen. What the Times told us about their method for digging into this gigantic raw archive is that they did keyword searches. They basically put a team of reporters together. I guess The Guardian actually built the search interface, and people went and, you know, thought in enterprising ways about what words they should search on. Now, there's a very interesting clue in that statement, because if that's the method that the Times has used to spot news in the cables, then how is it that nobody at the Times searched for the word kleptocracy? It turns out, indeed, there are about six cables that have been released so far that have the word kleptocracy in them, including the one about Libya, which the Times just recently reported on. And you really have to ask, why didn't the Times consider this news back in November, December, when they were doing their big splash of news? There are cables, which they've now reported on, which they had all along, that show that U.S. diplomats thought that Libya was a complete kleptocracy, and our intelligence relations with their spy service were, quote, excellent, and that they were a loyal ally in the war on terror. You'd think that that contradiction might have been news. So I think we need to pay attention to the fact that there is this incredibly valuable archive of information sitting over on West 43rd Street in Manhattan. And maybe the Times is overwhelmed and they're really busy. After all, there is a lot of news going on in the world today. And their reporters are, you know, trying to cover it valiantly. Maybe they could use some help. You know, maybe they should open that archive up in some fashion. But it seems to me that we should not ignore the fact that it is here in our country, that the information is here. Two last points. Just checking how I'm doing on time. I'll be very quick. In terms of other things that are broken, it's also clear that President Obama's commitment to transparency is broken. I assume Glenn will talk about this, so I'm not going to say a lot about it, but it is WikiLeaks has yet again made very stark the fact that we have like two governments in the United States, the one that we elect and the one that actually decides things. And on military, national security, it's like we have a permanent government that's impervious to democratic control. And this is extremely troubling. If we have to dismantle that if we're ever going to live in a truly open society. My last point. The one last critical point, and for this conference especially important, WikiLeaks has shown us how valuable the internet is this distributed resource that many of us can connect to and upload into and not just take information out of, that it is resilient, it can be a force for democracy, and it is incredibly fragile. When Amazon, on just the whiff of a threat from Senator Lieberman, decided to kick WikiLeaks off its servers back in the fall, there was no criminal case, there was no violation of copyright. These are the reasons Amazon gave for kicking WikiLeaks off, which were completely bogus. You know, I thought to myself, wow, I'm beginning to understand what McCarthyism was like, when people would, you know, lose their rights without any sort of real, you know, case being brought, just by intimidation, political intimidation. And so we have to remember and fight for the unpopular speech that the internet makes possible, to protect it and make sure that people can speak on it freely. And when private companies like Amazon or PayPal or MasterCard, Visa, and so on, violate, just pick out of the thin air, some violation of their terms of service. This goes way beyond net neutrality, folks. Net neutrality, if we want it, would not fix this problem. We have to think broader than that. But that's what's at stake. This kind of ability to access the information that we really need, the internet is making it possible. We have to fight and make sure that we can continue to do that. Thank you.
Thanks, Micah.